I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Lauren, let me ask you a question. If you could volunteer to have a chip put in your brain that allowed you to book guests here on Something Offbeat by just thinking about it, would you do it?
Well, I already have my phone in my hand about 99% of the time, and I'm always looking at my work emails. So I think I should draw the work-life balance line somewhere, and a brain chip might actually be it. How about you? Would you like to get on the air at KRLD just by thinking about it?
You know, I think I'd have to take a hard pass on that. You're putting something in my brain. And you know what? I think most people would, but not everyone.
Yeah, this idea may seem out of science fiction, but if you keep up with the exploits and projects of billionaire Elon Musk, you probably know that it might be on its way to becoming reality with Neuralink, a brain chip that connects human brains with technology.
This is a fascinating and complicated subject, and we had a lot of questions about it, and so we reached out to two guests this week.
You'll be hearing from science journalist Faye Flam, who wrote about Neuralink for Bloomberg, and from Dr. L. Sid M. Johnson, a philosopher, bioethicist, neuroethicist, clinical ethics consultant, and associate professor of bioethics and humanities at SUNY Upstate Medical University.
That's a really long title. I wonder if she can get that all on one business card. I'm your host, Mike Rogers. This is Something Offbeat. First up, we've got Dr. Johnson. Brain implants, it's all something that I know for a lot of people, it sounds really, really scary. Is it? Should we be scared?
I think we should be, actually, given who is doing the research on this. Now, there has been research on brain implants of various types since the 1970s. Brain-computer interface research has been ongoing since then. And a lot of these experiments involve wearable devices and sometimes with implantable devices as well. There are currently only a few dozen living people in the world who have implanted devices, right? And they're all currently experimental. But the research that's been done, you know, allows a user to control an external device like a robotic arm. Some of the research involves just taking electrical signals from someone's scalp, and those are, you know, very safe and non-invasive for those users. My concerns about the Neuralink implant is what they intend to do with it, but also sort of their poor track record so far with research, and then all of the hype and the overpromising that they're doing about what these devices will be able to do.
Here's a bit of background on the Neuralink project. This January, the company conducted its first human implantation of its brain-computer interface. The patient has been able to do things such as play online chess and other video games. However, some things haven't gone as planned. Inside the patient's body resides the N1 implant. Neuralink describes this as an intracortical BCI implant designed to record neural activity through 1,024 electrodes distributed across 64 threads. Each of these threads is thinner than a human hair, but some of those threads have already slipped out of place.
Neuralink's website currently has a call for study volunteers on it, but it's not a typical type of medical study. What made you concerned about this project?
Well, I think I was more curious and fascinated than concerned. I had written something last year about technology that was designed to help people who have something called locked-in syndrome, which really, it's a very chilling kind of thing where people are not just paralyzed, but they can actually be unable to speak and unable to communicate. And occasionally they recover and live to tell about it. And one guy said, yeah, I could hear my wife and the doctor talking about whether they should pull the plug on me. You know, they People are actually sometimes completely locked in, either from a neurological condition like ALS or from a stroke. I thought it was really intriguing. I think the main concern is that something could go wrong and that could set the whole field back. And that we've seen that happen with other kinds of medical technology. If they rush too much and one of these early volunteers has a bad side effect, that could be a real problem.
It's kind of like so many things dealing with technology these days. There's a lot of possible good, but there's a lot of possible bad as well.
Yeah, and I think if you read a lot about Elon Musk's motivation for doing this, it's a little different from the doctors that are trying to help bring some abilities back to the disabled. You know, Musk wants to, he said his ultimate goal is to have brain implants for regular people so that we can keep from being taken over by hostile AI. And if you ask around about this, you know, people will say, well, okay, we don't know that much about the potential threat of hostile AI. You know, we certainly don't know whether brain implants for everyone is going to be the solution to that problem. So there's a concern that he could be rushing this for reasons that aren't really medically justified.
Are we looking kind of it's a race to beat the competition and that corners are being cut in the process?
I would certainly have those concerns about Neuralink. There isn't really competition happening here. There have been scientists, as I say, who've worked on therapeutic implants for decades, right? And of course, important concerns about safety and the safety of the user and also how to get those devices to actually work in the way that we want them to work. Neuralink, you know, has this vision of creating devices for the general public, not just devices that are therapeutic that might help, you know, patients who are paralyzed, for example, to achieve functionality. So there, you know, we really should have some concerns about what they're planning to do. Brain implants are actually very niche products. If we're really only talking about developing them for paralyzed individuals or people with neurological conditions, that's a pretty small market. And these are very expensive devices, especially for an implantable device. There's huge hurdles to making something like that affordable for therapeutic use, while also making it profitable for the company that's creating them. So I suspect their ultimate goal is really to use the brain data that they're acquiring to develop other kinds of devices, maybe for gaming, maybe to drive a Tesla, who knows. There you might have a much bigger market, right? And they've already said that their long-term vision is to create these interfaces for the general population. But if that's the case, then they're using these human research subjects, people who have genuine medical needs that might be met by BCI technology, and exploiting them and using them in risky research for someone else's commercial gain, which is what I think is happening.
Let's talk about the medical aspects of it. What are some of the medical upsides? These implants can, in theory, do what?
Well, the guy, you know, they've done one, and the guy has been interviewed. Actually, he was interviewed by a guy at Bloomberg News who was the biographer of Elon Musk. And this young man, I think he's 30 now, that when he was in his early 20s, he dove into a lake and somehow hit his head and it was completely paralyzed from the neck down after that. And he volunteered to be the first person to get this Neuralink implant, and brain surgeons actually cut through his skull and embedded a little sort of quarter-sized device that had little tiny electrodes. And he was able to do all kinds of things he couldn't do before. So he was able to sort of move a cursor around a screen by just sort of thinking by activating certain neural pathways. And he was enjoying playing video games and chess and communicating on the screen. When he was profiled, he reported that it improved his life a lot. Unfortunately, it looks like he's lost some of that ability because the implant hasn't stayed in place. So it could end up a very sad story if it doesn't last.
Yeah. Now tell me about that. It didn't stay where it was supposed to stay, did it?
Yeah, there aren't that, you know, when I wrote my op-ed, it was before that happened, though I think a lot of people were wondering because he's the first patient and they've done a lot of these tests in animals. But this guy is the first human to get this type of implant. And apparently he started to lose some of the abilities that he had to move things on a computer screen. And they think some of these tiny electrodes may have slipped just because of differences between the human brain and the animal brain. And I think that, you know, we don't really know what's in store for him, whether that they'll be able to repair it or improve it. And Elon Musk, of course, wants to go ahead with more patients. FDA would prefer they wait and kind of get the details ironed out with this case first.
When Flam mentioned how sad it would be if the implant results didn't last, it reminded me of the movie Awakenings. In that film, Robin Williams plays a fictionalized version of Dr. Oliver Sacks. His team of doctors are able to awaken patients from a catatonic state with this new medicine that they find, but then they realize that the effects are temporary. This movie makes me cry every time I see it.
I always cry at the end of Little Mermaid, but that's a subject for a different day. Dr. Johnson said there could be actually some really positive applications of the Neuralink technology.
There are potentially really important things that an implant might enable someone to do. So control a powered wheelchair, for example, or use a computer, both of which might help that person move around and be active in the world or to be employed, right? Things that might currently be out of reach for them. And we certainly know that, you know, people who are wheelchair users, people with disabilities are disadvantaged in employment. They're disadvantaged just moving about and participating in everyday life. An implant that actually provided that kind of access for someone could be a really important innovation.
But we still had some concerns, especially this one you brought up.
I suppose if I were a quadriplegic, I might be willing to take any kind of chance, right? But I'm not. And there's a little tiny part of me, a little conspiracy theorist in me that says, what's going to happen when they put this thing in my head? Are they going to control me?
What Dr. Johnson revealed here blew my mind a little bit.
We have HIPAA and other privacy laws that should be protecting those individuals' privacy. And when someone is doing research that involves the use of brain data, there are laws about how their privacy and their data should be protected. Is that happening? Are they following those rules at Neuralink? I don't know. Another reason to be concerned here, though, is the potential to hack the implant. We've already actually seen hacking occur with implanted cardiac pacemakers and defibrillators that are vulnerable to manipulation and to remote reprogramming. And you can imagine the harm that that could cause to someone whose health and their safety actually depend on that device functioning properly. So if someone gets access to your brain implant, I don't think they're going to be able to control your mind, but they might be able to control whatever devices your implant is connected to. And for someone who's dependent on that device to communicate or to do their job or for their mobility, that loss of control could be really devastating interference with their autonomy and with their agency.
And Flam offered some fascinating context about where Neuralink fits in among other research in this field.
It's so new. There are other research groups out there trying different approaches for the same thing. So this isn't a complete outlier. There's a device called the Utah Array that research groups associated with universities are studying, partly for restoring abilities to quadriplegics or people with locked-in syndrome or other types of sort of extreme paralysis. The Neuralink device is unique, but the idea of implanting a device or using some less invasive technology to do something similar, that's out there. And in fact, that's the other reason that Elon Musk has reported that he wants to rush is to beat these competitors, which is also a potential problem. You know, years ago, I wrote about a gene therapy experiment at the University of Pennsylvania where one of the early volunteers died. And it set the whole field of gene therapy back by years. And it was a big disaster. And they did everything, they had all of the FDA approvals. But once people looked in hindsight, they saw where these people had rushed things in order to beat their competitors.
I seem to recall that the captain of the Titanic wanted to race through that iceberg field to set the record to New York. So bad things can happen, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. When I wrote this editorial, I called a couple of medical ethicists and their concerns had to do with transparency. That, you know, at some point, doctors, in order to help people, have to move forward with things that are new. But when everything's done right, it's all transparent. There are no secrets. The whole scientific community knows what they're doing. There's a chance for other people to comment, to make sure everything is as it's supposed to be, and to make sure that the volunteers know everything about what they're getting into. So if the ethicists don't know whether this, they have true informed consent, because they don't know what the Neuralink people told this volunteer.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're an ethicist. Are there ethical issues here? Are we playing God in a way that could blow up in our faces?
There are a lot of potential ethical issues. I'm not so worried about playing God. I don't think that could happen. But aside from, you know, the safety and the health concerns, there are major concerns about privacy. Neuralink's going to have access to an enormous amount of brain data from the subjects who have their implants. What do they plan to do with it? Are they going to record it and keep it? How are they going to protect that user's privacy? The Neuralink device also connects to the brain device, connects to a phone or a computer using Bluetooth. Can that connection be hacked? One reason to hack it would be to gain access to their brain data. Patients who have brain implants that record their brain activity, so patients with deep brain stimulators, for example, have expressed concerns about how their brain data might be used or whether it would reveal things about them that they would prefer to keep private.
Are there physical concerns too? Because I've read about these implants perhaps moving around in your brain a little and questions about the electrodes.
Brain damage is a major concern anytime you are intervening on the brain. So there are risks of infection. There's a risk of rejection. Scar tissue can build up around an implant, which can interfere with its functioning. In the first patient, some recent reports are that the leads came out of his brain, and he also had reportedly had some air buildup inside his skull. The brain is really exquisitely vulnerable. It's encased in this rigid skull, which is supposed to protect it from the outside world, but it also makes it really vulnerable to injury inside the skull. If you have swelling of your brain that's caused by bleeding or by infection, those can really quickly become fatal.
All right, Lauren, let's get into the Elon of it all.
Right. We all know Musk is a controversial figure, from his online trolling to appearing on Saturday Night Live and his many business projects. What's pretty clear, though, is that he can get impressive things done fast.
You know, my wife has a little wall hanging in the kitchen. It says, "Get bleep done." And it doesn't say bleep. And that's Elon Musk. I mean, no matter what you think of him personally or politically, he is a getter done kind of guy. People thought the electric car was a lost cause. Then Tesla became popular. He's building many of the rockets that NASA's been sending into space.
I have to say, Mike, the more I learn about your wife, the more I adore her. But yeah, his Starlink internet satellites became integral to the war raging in Ukraine. That's just one of the many projects that he has going on. But there have also been concerns about those projects, their safety, and whether they give him too much power.
Does his track record with his other companies, both good and bad, speak to the transparency of this project and what we might expect?
Yeah, that's the problem. That's not the Silicon Valley ethic is completely different from the mainstream medical ethic. And we saw that with Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos. You know, she wanted to move fast and break things. And that really does not work when you're dealing with people's health. And I think in this case, you know, there were some critics who said, you know, he, with SpaceX, it was great, but he blew up the first couple of rockets. We don't want to blow up the first couple of people's brains. You know, that's not an acceptable way to proceed when you have these volunteers that we have to move very carefully.
He has said that the next implant is expected, I guess, pretty soon here, perhaps even by the end of the month. Now, would that be a next generation, a different implant, an improved one, or would that be a second test on the original?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what, and some of that is that they don't, you know, they don't disclose everything that they're going to do. This doesn't come out in the scientific literature, or the medical literature that people like me have access to, you know, that they may give out some things to insiders or at sort of conferences and things, but this is not something that gets reported in the journal, you know, the New England Journal of Medicine. I wish it was, that we'd know, and more of us would know more about it and be writing about it.
I mean, where are we going to be in 50 or 100 years? How many people are going to have these implants?
These are not plug-and-play devices. It frequently takes the users months and months of practice for them to be able to control the device and for that device to translate their brain signals accurately. So this is not like buying a new iPhone where you have a 10-minute setup and you're good to go. The monkey playing Pong, for example, which we all saw those videos a year or so ago, that was after he had a year of learning how to use that device, a year of practicing just to do something as simple as control a cursor to play a game of Pong. Obviously, a human user has far more sophisticated uses for a brain implant than, you know, playing a simple video game like that. We also live in a world right now where millions of people don't have even the most basic access to healthcare or clean water or shelter. And Neuralink is definitely not for them, right? This is a device for rich people like Musk. And the technology right now is so far from having widespread impact and so far from being able to enhance typical human abilities.
Would you let him put an implant in your brain?
Maybe. If I were in the same position as this young man who volunteered and, you know, I was completely paralyzed from the neck down and I was only, you know, 20 something years old. I had my whole life ahead of me. I hadn't really been able to get a career going because of my disability. And I'm being offered the chance to manipulate a computer the way everybody else does, many of us for our profession. I think I might do it. I would want to explore all the options and look at all the other possibilities out there. But if it seemed like it offered hope, you know, and a reasonable shot.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to Something Off Beats. This episode written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake, with audio editing by Chris Blake and original music by Myron Kaplan. Now, to keep listening, subscribe to us on the Odyssey app or Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, please send it to us at somethingoffbeat@Odyssey. That's AUDACY.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.